The series until kind of in the end of August-ish, we're going to be talking about fullness. And fullness conjures up all kinds of images in my mind. And one of the ones that conjures up, and this, you're probably thinking of all kinds of things that might be in here. But actually, it's quite harmless. That's my mug. And that will hold 3 cans of Pepsi, or a whole lot of coffee, and you never would do that before you preach, if you're traveling or anything else. What I want you to keep in your mind related to this theme, because I had lined up at home every imaginable size of cups that we have, including a little wee tiny one like that, it's not about the size of the mug. It's not about the size of the vessel. It's about how full the vessel is. So you could experience fullness even in a small vessel, is the point. So fullness conjures up images of, to me, things like a river in flood season, like a bowl heaped with food, or the fuel needle in the dashboard pointing to the F. Fullness is both the kind and quality of life that Jesus makes possible for you and me to live. It's the opposite of emptiness, and it's the essence of being alive. To me, a getting-by kind of life isn't really appealing. God offers a life characterized as full, joyful, purposeful, hopeful, meaningful, a life that is full of promise, the mind that is full of peace, the spirit that is full of spark. That is the me that I'd like to be consistently. But that is not always the case. Some time ago, I saw a squirrel, and it reminded me of me sometimes. Squirrels intrigue me. They're crafty. They can be pests, even quite destructive. They can even be quite vicious. But some would say that they look so cute and cuddly. Isn't that true? So this squirrel that I saw when I was driving. Its bushy tail caught my attention. I would say it was almost fluffy. It looked soft and fuzzy. It kind of flowed in the wind. I see that with most squirrels as they run or bounce from one place to the next. Their tail seems to effortlessly float behind them, kind of mimicking the movements of the squirrel. The tail just kind of wobbles just gently behind the squirrel. So the one that I saw was waving gently. It seemed healthy and vibrant. It had a nice black sheen to it. It's almost like someone put a coat of Grecian formula on it. It was just really shiny. That was the first thing that caught my eye. And don't misunderstand me. Even though that was the first thing that caught my eye, I don't have a thing for squirrels. but this one just caught my attention. The tail looked great, but the second thing that I noticed was the rest of the squirrel. You see, the squirrel itself was, well, flat. It was about as flat as the condition of the sole of your shoe, flat. The poor thing had been the victim of a hit and run, seemed like quite a few of them, actually, and its body was reduced to a slim cadaver. And on the surface, no pun intended, the squirrel, if the tail was any indication, was doing well, even thriving. But in reality, life of the squirrel was flat, lifeless. If I look at myself, I probably have to include others with me. It makes me feel better because all of our lives are flat at times. Every one of us, it's like a tire that's been, you've hit the brakes too hard and it's drug along the pavement for too long, it ends up with a flat spot. And sometimes we end up with flat spots in our lives because of the way life is to us. Mine is like that sometimes. It's why the squirrel reminded me of me, because I feel like that sometimes. On the outside, we might look all right. Our words and our body language and a lot of things about us would indicate that we are doing well, that we're healthy and doing fine. But in reality, at the core of our being, it has become flat and lifeless. Certainly not full and vibrant. And we are not fully alive, and it's all too common. Certainly for many of us, it doesn't last long, and it's not always, but there are moments that we experience that. Martin Luther King Jr. said this, "Oh, the worst of all tragedies is not to die young, but to live until I am 75 and yet not ever truly to have lived." And he didn't live long. But what if it didn't have to be like that? What if life could be different? What if we didn't have to dread waking up in the morning? What if we had something to look forward to, something that made us smile, something that inspired us, something that made us feel great about ourselves, that we could handle the day because we know the day is going to be great? What if who people saw us on the outside matched who we really were on the inside? What if we didn't have to resemble the squirrel, fluffy but flat, movement without life? What if it could be different? God tells us we don't have to live like that. He even makes it possible for us to live full lives, meaningful lives, full in many different dimensions. You see, fullness comes when there is openness. And openness comes when we find ourselves empty and admit that we need to fill up. Just like the reminder on the dash that flashes E. And you know that you need to do something about it. And if you don't do it, there's implications, consequences. Life is like that. Run on empty too long, and there's implications, there's consequences, and it will always impact other people and not just you. So this morning, I want to talk about three things about fullness of life. I would like to highlight three things. And the first is this. Fullness of life is about a mutual relationship. Obviously, relationships don't work if they're not mutual. A one-sided relationship, to me, is just, it's just not a relationship. It's not sustainable. It's not worthwhile. It just ultimately creates frustration and a whole lot of other negative things. This mutual relationship is between me and the one who actually can enable me to experience fullness of life. And the only person that can pull that off is Jesus and me. The only one. Any other human being in my life can make all kinds of promises of giving me fullness of life, but it always is limited to their humanity, but not with Jesus. We find this in Jesus' teaching about shepherds and sheep in John chapter 10. Verses 2 and verse 7 says, "The one who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. I tell you the truth, I am the gate of the sheep." Shepherds, in many instances, were the gate of the sheep, whether it was a stone corral or sticks and so on knitted together. The shepherd literally would oftentimes lay across the gate, the entryway, so that nothing could come in and nothing could get out. So he literally was a shepherd, was the gate of the sheep. So he says again in verse 7, "I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved," right, referring to the sheep. Safe from the predators. It's used in the sense of being safe within the confines of the shepherd's protection. Not even so much the area of protection, but the fact that the shepherd is there, the sheep are safe. On another occasion, Jesus said, "Live in me and I will live in you." Mutual relationship. He said in the same context, "Apart from me," most of you know the rest of it, "apart from me, you can do absolutely nothing of any spiritual substance and significance." This mutual relationship is so critical. Jesus offers a relationship that leads to fullness of life, but he leaves the choice up to us. See, fullness of life comes from a source outside of ourselves that, in response to openness, comes inside of us, fills us, and gives us life. It's this exchange of who we want, not so much to change, but we do anyway, and we give it to somebody else that can make our life different. The second thing I'd like to highlight is the fact that fullness of life is built on purpose. Purpose. Jesus addresses the opposite of this first. So many people wrestle with purpose in life, and there's a direct correlation to that connection with Christ. In John 10, verses 8 and 10, the beginning of each of those verses, it says this, "All who came before me were thieves and robbers. The thief's purpose was to steal and kill and destroy." He would steal the sheep because then he could make them part of his own flock of sheep, and he would have more sheep. He would kill the sheep sometimes for food. He'd slaughter them for his own well-being or for the well-being of other people around him. And he would destroy the sheep sometimes just because he really didn't care about someone else's sheep. It literally means injury of a violent nature, destruction, ruin, doesn't care. He could just do it to be vindictive to the other owner of the sheep. But there are things that prevent or hinder fullness of life. That's what this teaches me. There are things that can prevent you from and me from knowing fullness of life. Things that will steal our peace and our purpose. Things that will kill our joy and our vision. Things that will destroy our hopes and our dreams. Sometimes we're the cause of that happening. Sometimes it's outside of us, circumstances. But there are things that can prevent fullness of life. But Jesus says in John 10:10, "My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life." And it is not speaking at all about the physical conditions of our lives, about the condition of the world around us. It has nothing to do with property and possessions. It has everything to do with what's inside of us. Because this word is referring to the principle of life in the spirit and soul and expresses all of the highest and best that God would have for us. That's where God engages us, inside. And when he engages you and I on the inside, then it starts to affect what comes out and is expressed beyond us. The kind of life is characterized as rich and satisfying, or more literally is defined as abundance. And there's so many ways to define this, but it's like this mug being filled and just keep pouring things into it. It just comes fuller and fuller and fuller until it overflows. The fullest kind of life that you could imagine, beyond your measure of exceeding, more than enough, over and beyond anything that you could imagine, Paul says in Ephesians. Paul actually says in Ephesians 3:19, "May you experience the love of Christ, though it is too great for us to fully understand. Then you will be made complete with all the fullness of life and power that comes from God." And again, Paul's reference is to what's on the inside, not just on the outside. A.T. Pearson says this, "It is a great deal better to be full and overflowing than to be empty and have nothing to overflow with." It's like the end of it. It's so much more significant to have something that overflows your life. Jesus came so that we could have life to the full, not full of ourselves, not full of our stuff, not all the trappings of success, but a life filled to overflowing with purpose and value, meaning and significance. I remember reading a book years ago about the midlife kind of stuff, and the whole tenor of the book was moving from success to significance. We're working half of your lifetime to accumulate a home and a family and all of these kinds of things that says I'm successful in the world around me, and finding that it's never enough, that there's got to be more with life. And it's a shift from thinking that it's all about what I have to it's what I can do with that that makes a difference. So it shifts from me to the people around me and other things about me that I can do to bless other people. So many people that Jesus met and helped with had lives that were flat, less than vibrant, void of fullness. They really didn't have full life. Some of them couldn't. They were lepers, they were outcasts, they were blind, they were restricted in so many ways. But Jesus brought them fullness of life. And in many instances, as much as they were healed physically, in a lot of instances, there was also often a corresponding transformation on the inside, because that's what really mattered. And in fact, Jesus often changed them inside before he healed them and changed them on the outside. I've discovered that many times it's a challenge to get the correlation between our purpose in life and our relationship with Jesus, but it's there. And finding and following Jesus and trying to understand what he wants to do in your life, it's like a match set. Discover that bigger picture, understand who Jesus is, and you begin to realize purpose in your life. Third highlight, fullness of life has relational markers. relational markers. It's all about relationship. It's all about the shepherd and the sheep. It's all about Jesus and you and me. I would say the fullness is characterized, I'll mention four of them here, characterized first of all by voice recognition. It's like a lot of technology these days. All you have to do is talk and something does something. I remember years ago, we got excited because if you clapped, a light would come on in your room. Now you just tell it to come on and things come on. Common day stuff in our world, it's all about voice recognition. It's like me too. I love it when I speak and somebody turns around and pays attention because they've heard my voice. Now, when children are being raised, that's not always the case. Oftentimes when I would speak, my kids would turn the other way. And maybe that wasn't just common to me, but this is what Jesus says. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep recognize his voice, and they come to him. They come to him. So there's two words that are very important here, and you're familiar with them. And I would say, to some degree, you understand Koine Greek, the common Greek of Jesus' day. Because the word for recognize is the word akouo, where we get our word acoustics, which is to hear. The word for voice is phoneto, which means phonetics, which means to hear or to speak, sorry. So Jesus is saying the shepherd recognized the sheep's voice and came to him. He heard the voice, he recognized the voice, and he followed. The sheep followed just because of those two characteristics. John 10:5 says, they won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice. Instead of coming, they run. They literally flee from him because they don't recognize a voice. I've always been intrigued with the fact that God knows our voice. He knows everything about you. Even in the midst of 7 billion people talking, God recognizes your voice. I've heard all kinds of lines like you have. Well, I don't pray because God's too busy with other people. That's a really small God. I don't worship a God that tiny. My God is capable of hearing anybody that at any time comes to him with anything and speaks their voice. And he wants you to recognize his voice as well. The next marker is name recognition. It's like me having a conversation with someone on the phone or via email or any other way and setting up a meeting, and I've never met this person before, and it happens many times, and you don't know what they look like, and you want to find them, and so you go and you go to the meet appointed place and time, and the risk is putting out your hand and saying, I'm Bill, and you realize this is the wrong person, and they're wondering why you're doing this. But when it works, and you meet the person that you connected with that you've never met before, and you say, I'm Bill, and all of a sudden they smile because there's this connection, because now we've got a common purpose, which is why we're meeting, and the name means everything. Jesus says that he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out by name. Typical for Eastern shepherds, even today, to give names to their sheep descriptive of something about their own personality as sheep. As odd as that might sound to us, they call their name, and the name has something to do with that animal. When I hear Bill, I immediately look in the direction of the voice that called Bill. It gets awkward if there's more of us turning their heads. It's not often the case, but it happens. Sometimes it happens at work. Last summer, we were building a very large house in Guelph, and we don't usually build in the city, but we were, and we were there for about 3 months, and I was asked to move a window in a wall. It had been framed about 3 inches off. I wasn't the one that originally built the wall, but I'm the one, when there's a problem like that, Max says, Bill, I got something for you to fix, which is part of what I do. So he told me very clearly, this is where the wall needs to be put, and he had the lines marked on the floor and everything, and then we had conversations about it. So I do it, I fix the wall, I move everything over to where I believed it was to be, and about a half hour later, and actually that is in this room, this was the library in this house. The whole room was going to be library, so it was a very important place. So I still remember being on this side of the house, probably where the second window over there is, and Max over here. And he says, Bill, can I see you in the library? Can I see you in the library? So I go over, and I had not moved the wall to where the wall was supposed to be. So now every time when I hear my boss's voice, Bill, I sometimes literally say to him, it's not about the library, is it? Because we make mistakes, but your name is significant. Hearing your name is important. God knows you by name. Certainly he knows everything about you. The Bible teaches it. In Isaiah, God says about his chosen people, I have called you by name, you are mine. A few chapters later, in Isaiah 49:16, he says, I have written your name on the palms of my hands. I didn't really look up the word this time, but one translation, I have inscribed your name on the palms of my hands. It's almost like your name has been tattooed on God's hand and he can never forget it. There's always a remembrance of who you are. He knows you by name. There's also facial recognition. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not good. There's times when we want to be anonymous and we don't want facial recognition, so we do what we do to avoid that. John 10:14, I'm the good shepherd. I know my own sheep, and they know me. And that word know isn't just talking about intellectual awareness, but a mutual relationship. That when we see someone, even the characteristics about their demeanor and about their physical appearance give us cause to recognize them for who they are. The face is one of the most predominant ways of doing that. It's not to know intuitively, but experientially. You just know that person. You know the person. I'm not sure if I have told you this, maybe a little bit, but a number of years ago, I had the privilege of meeting someone that, as far as I know, was never a believer, but his mom and dad were. And for a number of years at Crossroads, I would visit his parents in their retirement room, in the retirement home. And when I visited, it was typically on the end of a Friday afternoon. And this guy's name was Bill. The son's name was Bill. And every time I would visit, there was two things that happened. When I started to visit this elderly couple, they made the mistake of offering me a Pepsi. Well, as time went on, I don't know, something shifted in one of their minds. And so every time I came, she started to say, are you ready for your second Pepsi? There is a point to this, by the way. And she wouldn't believe me when I said I only drink one Pepsi. So literally, I would not leave until I drank the Pepsi, and she was good with that. Well, the other thing that happened, either before I got there or while I was there, their oldest son would come, having brought coffee to them. Every Friday afternoon, he brought coffee to Mom and Dad. He typically knew I was coming, but he would never buy me coffee because he knew I was looked after. But he was a very unique character. And I understood, took me a while, but I kind of learned how he was communicating and what he really meant when he talked. But every time, if he walked into the room holding, because he was always looking down, he'd hold the coffee, pull the door, shut the door, and then he'd look up at Mom and Dad, and he'd see me. Or I'd open the door for him if it was the other way around. And as soon as he'd look at me, it's like, oh, it's you. That's what he would do every time he saw my face. Over a while, that was like a term of endearment. Love you too, Bill. But that was Bill. But he recognized me. And he knew there was life beyond the title and position of pastor, which was really cool. Bill and Bill were normal people who could converse about a lot of things, even with Mom and Dad around. God knows your face. He knows it's more than skin deep. He knows it's you. The last is behavioral recognition. I have to thank my researcher, Mimi, for this one. She helped me try to figure out a better way to say this. Behavioral recognition is all about your mannerisms, your characteristics, everything about you beyond that we normally think that might identify you as someone, a person knows. In verses 4 and 9 of John 10, Jesus said, after he gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them and they follow him because they know his voice. They will come and go freely and will find good pastures. The sheep and the shepherd are so intimately acquainted with each other. They're so familiar with each other. One, they don't want to go near anybody that they don't recognize. But two, on the other hand, they totally trust their shepherd. That when they stop at the green pastures or by the still waters or when they're on the rocky trails, wherever, they know that when the shepherd is around, they're safe. There's a safety piece to this. There's this sense of confidence because the shepherd has provided for them and cares for them, and they know this. So Jesus is drawn to people whose lives seem flat. He's drawn to people who need an infusion of life, especially if they get to the point that they admit that they don't have it all together and that they need a boost. I never get help from a doctor until I go to a doctor and say, I need help. I never get help on any level unless I actually speak up and say something about it or do something about it. And that's what God wants us to do with him. Jesus said, my purpose is to give life in all of its fullness. I like something Mark Twain said because I think it's true and I think it's beautiful as much as it's kind of oddly humorous. Mark Twain, who wrote Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn and all those old books, said, let us endeavor so to live life that when we come to die, even the undertaker will be sorry. Wow. Your life had meant so much that even at your death, people that you would never want to encounter would miss you being around. There are takeaway questions in your notes and on your phones if you're following. I'm not going to go through those. But my encouragement is, as you look at your own journey, where you are in life, whether or not it looks like a before or after picture of a squirrel or not, I would encourage you to look at yourself and see what kind of life that you need based on the life that you're living now. Father, I thank you for how you're so good to us, so patient, so kind. You know how difficult the journey of life is, Jesus. You lived it, you've experienced it, you died because of it. And I pray, Jesus, that as we walk with you, as we face times that make us feel flat, that life isn't vibrant anymore, that we'd go to the one consistently who gives fullness of life. And may that kind of fullness, Lord, overflow so that it changes other people's lives around us. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.